This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 127.
So for me, a number of times, and I'm sure Wanda's had this experience too, you'll be brought into an organization to consult to a team, and the description is, well, we've got this clique, we've got this subgroup, and they're the problem. What I started noticing time and again was that oftentimes those are the people who did have the most power, who were involved in some significant things. And what started to become obvious was that rather than being a bug, they were actually a feature. And so what would happen if instead of looking at needing to fix that as a problem, what if we stepped in and actually worked with that team and helped those people actually work with a larger team? So if you think about an operating committee, let's say it has 15 people on it. If you have a smaller team, usually comprised of the CFO, the CHRO, and somebody else, is there a way that we can work with that sub-team that's already working together in a way that helps the other team be more effective? And that has proven to be much more useful.
How do the most effective leadership teams really make decisions? Why do traditional approaches to team effectiveness often fail? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. Hey everyone, there has never been a better time to be in HR, and the expectations on HR leaders has never been higher. So if you're really serious about becoming a more business-focused and strategic HR leader, then you need to make attending my Next Gen HR Accelerator program part of your 2025 development plan. The Next Gen HR Accelerator program is the best leadership development program for HR directors and managers because it'll build your business and financial acumen, sharpen your strategic thinking, elevate your executive influence and communication skills, and teach you how to translate business strategy to HR initiatives that drive impact and value. You also get the opportunity to grow as a leader, as every next-gen HR participant receives 360 feedback, coaching from me, and leads with a targeted from-to development plan. Companies who have trusted me to develop their HR leaders include Verizon, McDonald's, Nike, Prudential, Hershey, Kohler, and many more. Our next cohort starts April 22nd, and you can register now through April 2nd. Space is limited, and we expect to sell out as we have for all of our past cohorts. Go to futureofhr.com, that's futureofhr.com, or reach out to me directly to learn more. And with that, my guest this week is Wanda Wallace and Darren Overfield. Wanda is the managing partner of Leadership Forum, an expert in leadership effectiveness, and a sought-after executive coach, keynote speaker, and she's also the author of You Can't Know It All, Leading in the Age of Deep Expertise. And this is her second time on the podcast, and I encourage you to check out episode 38, Leading When You Don't Know It All, to learn more about Wanda and learn from her. Joining Wanda is Darren Overfield, who is the Executive Vice President, Coaching and Consulting at Kaiser Leadership Solutions. And Darren has coached over 200 executives and worked with countless executive teams over the course of his career. And when Darren's not coaching, consulting, or working with a top team, he's writing, speaking, or researching about leadership and teams. And I'm so excited to have Wanda and Darren joining us this week because they're going to talk about a new and innovative approach to top team effectiveness that they've been researching and implementing with their clients. And if you are an HR or talent leader who wants to help your top teams to be more effective or just to elevate your approach to working with top teams, then I think you should grab a pen and paper as we discuss why traditional ideas about executive team effectiveness often fail in the real world, the surprising discovery that cliques and subgroups in executive teams can actually help, not hurt, team effectiveness, why transparency is critical to reducing conflict and improving team dynamics, how effective top teams zoom in and zoom out to encourage collaboration and healthy debates, and how HR leaders can guide their leaders in creating natural hubs that result in high-performing teams, and much, much more. I would love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn or say hello. And now let's jump into our conversation with Wanda and Darren. Wanda, Darren, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you both doing?
Pretty well, thanks.
Thanks, JP. Doing very well.
Well, it's great to have you both on the podcast. Wanda, I know this is your second time, so you're a two-timer. You're joining a very elite club. Darren, this may be your first time, but we'll hope to have you back. Excited to talk to you guys about top teens. You've been doing some really interesting research. And so, Wanda, I want to start with you a little bit. When we talk about top team effectiveness, there's just a ton of conventional wisdom that we kind of take for granted, right? You have to have psychological safety, consensus on goals, deep levels of trust. Yet you and Darren have recently begun to rethink and challenge some of these conventional wisdoms, which I think is awesome. So tell us more about what you're challenging and what you're finding. And maybe we could have wrong on this important topic of running effective teams.
All right. So let me paint a picture of what I think we all believe a top team, so a top management team, CEO and direct reports should be like. We would say they should all get along. They might be different personalities, but they should get along. They should be nice, respectful to each other. They should have a shared set of values that are consistent with the corporate values. They should have their enterprise hat on. We should have some sense of the greater good. Yes, there's a hierarchy in that the CEO is there so that we give the CEO some power, but we expect that team to operate in a non-hierarchical way. And that means that everybody has equal say and everybody has equal power. And that, yes, it's not a pure consensus because we don't have time for that, but it needs to feel more consensus-like than not. And we shouldn't be competing with each other. We're all in the same enterprise together for the same greater good at the end of the day, and off we go. And that anything, you said psychological safety, that we should feel free to say whatever is our own mind, there are no consequences, that we should have healthy debate, and that there should be deep levels of trust. In effect, we kind of operate like your image of the Knights of the Round Table, all sitting around having a wonderful, healthy debate about what might or might not happen, and maybe somebody eventually weighing in and saying, okay, we're going to go in this direction or not. The problem is, it doesn't seem to work that way in practice, because people don't have equal power sitting around that table, leaving the CEO out. Some people have higher revenue shares than others. That gives them more power. Some people have longevity. That gives them more power. What the greater good is, if I steal a page from Adam Kahane, is really dependent on where you're sitting in the organization. So there's a lot to question. And we all know consensus really doesn't work at the end of the day. And anybody who's tried to build trust in a top team knows that it's easy to say and really difficult to do. So we've been questioning that mythology.
And it makes a lot of sense. The way you lay that out, I think no one would disagree with you. We're all like, yes, yes, yes. But then why do we still have so many challenges with top teams? And I think that's a great question you guys have been asking. And then Darren, you said there's an aha moment that you've realized recently when you said maybe there's a different approach. Tell us more about the aha moment and what were some of the key insights that led to that?
Yeah, I think there were several engagements that kind of had a similar theme. And it took a while to figure out exactly what was going on. Then all of a sudden, things crystallized. So for me, a number of times, and I'm sure Wanda's had this experience too, you'll be brought into an organization to consult to a team. And the description is, well, we've got this clique, we've got this subgroup, and they're the problem. What I started noticing time and again was that oftentimes those are the people who did have the most power, who were involved in some significant things. And what started to become obvious was that rather than being a bug, they were actually a feature. And so what would happen if instead of looking at needing to fix that as a problem, what if we stepped in and actually worked with that team and helped those people actually work with the larger team? So if you think about an operating committee, let's say it has 15 people on it. If you have a smaller team, usually comprised of the CFO, the CHRO, and somebody else, is there a way that we can work with that sub-team that's already working together in a way that helps the other team be more effective? And that has proven to be much more useful.
If I can, I'm going to piggyback on that one because Darren and I've talked about this a whole bunch of times. I go in to do with some wonderful people that you all know and who are brilliant at this work. 3-day intervention with the top team. I think we do the best work that anybody can do anywhere. And I'll let Darren be the judge with whether that was right or not. But anyway, I think we did great work. Everybody coming out of the 3-day would say, oh, this was amazing. The head of HR is really thrilled, et cetera. You come back 9 months later and it's actually performing worse. And when I stop and look at how many times I think it has been a great moment, but the moment doesn't carry past the next month, you have to really pause and say, hold on here. But I had another aha talking with Darren. I reached back on my memory and said, which is the one top team that I know for a fact really functioned the way we dream a top team would function? And why? What do I know about the history of that team, the people involved? And what I realize is that there were three people on that top team who were incredibly close. They'd grown up in the business together. They didn't make a move without consulting with each other. They were just as tight as you can get. One of those happened to be the CEO. You start to look at that and you start to ask that about a bunch of questions. I see those threes and fours literally carrying the environment for the rest of the team.
I think it's such a great insight. And I love, Darren, you said it's a feature, not a bug. And I know if we were a marketing company and a product that had a bug and you turn that into the feature, then you're a marketing genius. But in this case, I think there's something really to it, to your point, because we've all been experienced that Juan has talked about. If you've been in a practitioner, you've done a great team offsite, everyone leaves feeling pumped and more aligned and closer together. But in 6-9 months, nothing's changed, right? Or things have gotten worse, God forbid. And so you guys are now saying that really we need to embrace these hugs, these smaller teams, and really find out what makes them tick. And that's what you guys started doing next. And so, Juan, tell us more about how CEOs or what you're seeing from these top teams, these hugs, how are they intentionally created and how are CEOs building this to get that added boost?
So I think every CEO I've ever talked to would say 15 to 25 people is an unruly bunch, not going to produce an awful lot. You need it. You need that group together for a host of really, really good reasons. But that's not a place we're going to have a real healthy debate, not with that many people. You could occasionally on some topics, but you can't do that in and day out. All the CEOs that I have been interviewing and the ones that I have worked with and have run our model by, and Darren will say the same thing too, start to describe that there is a small group that becomes their go-to pod and where the discussions and debate and the decisions really happen. And they haven't been thinking about it as a hub. They've just been thinking about it as a subset. And they'll give it various names, like an executive leadership team or a something other or whatever. And everybody knows that that's where the real debate happens, but nobody is being transparent about it. Nobody's talking about how do these two teams play in and off of each other. And that's what Darren and I are trying to get.
Hey, everyone. After a quick break, we'll be right back to our conversation with Wanda and Darren. Are you ready to take your career to the next level? If you are, then you need to download the HR Leaders Blueprint, featuring battle-tested strategies from over 100 HR thought leaders and CHROs. This comprehensive 18-page guide delivers actionable steps, strategic frameworks, and real-world insights to elevate your impact. No theoretical fluff, just proven tactics to becoming a business-focused HR leader. And the best part, it's completely free. To download the HR Leaders Blueprint, go to futureofhr.com. That's futureofhr.com. And if you want to get a jumpstart on your 2025 career goals, then you do not want to miss out on the HR Leaders Blueprint.
I'm trying to put my skeptical HR leader hat on a little bit, Darren, and maybe ask you, what if an HR leader is listening and says, well, won't we really be creating this inner circle and a hub that's really more about excluding people? They won't feel like they're part of the team. Is that true? What are the risks there? Are we excluding people? Or how do you be inclusive in this new world you're creating?
Well, I would pick up on a word that Wanda used, and to me, it's the operative word, transparency. So if you are a leader of a team, being transparent about this inner group that you already work with for a variety of good business reasons, explaining the why behind that, and being transparent about who that group is, how they function, I think what I've seen in my experience is that actually lessens conflict. It actually makes it easier for people to feel a part of things when they understand, okay, yeah, this is actually by design. But you also have to take the next step as a leader and explain how that inner team works well with the outer team. So you still have an operating committee and there's value there. But how does that smaller team work with the larger team? So that's one piece of it. The other thing, JP, that I would say, especially from an HR perspective, that's important is that I think HR has a valuable role to play here. And that is to help the leader, him or herself, take the responsibility for being the leader of their team. But that is not something that can be outsourced to HR. And sometimes for a variety of reasons, people try to do that. But this actually is a leader's responsibility. So helping them step into that, step into it with the intentionality. But the other thing that I would say, and this does get to your question about, hey, couldn't this be a harmful thing? Absolutely. So it's important, I think, as an HR professional to be mindful of how an inner hub could, in fact, be a bad thing. And so when do those become unhealthy? What I would say are some symptoms of that is that an inner hub doesn't zoom out. We'll talk more about what that means in a second, but doesn't work with the larger ecosystem. They don't listen to the outer ring. That's actually a very problematic thing. There's no substantive debate among that inner circle. So if it's an echo chamber for the CEO, if there's a lot of hero worshiping going on, that's not positive. But if you can create a really good team, all of the things that you think about that we talked about at the top of the podcast around psychological safety and dealing with conflict, all of those things, if you can create a team that does that well, that inner team is actually going to create a healthier, larger team.
Yeah, that's super helpful there. I'm like, let's talk a little about the transparency piece. I'm interested to know, how do you frame this up? A lot of CEOs already have the hubs and maybe they haven't really talked about it. And now they're like, hey, I want to be more formal. And what do some of those communications look like? What are some of the best practices to start to have that conversation with the broader team?
Yeah. So just recently began working with a new executive coaching client who's a CFO. When I interviewed the CEO that he reports to, she was fantastic. I didn't even have to prompt the question. She brought it up proactively. He's part of my inner circle. Here are the four people that are part of it. This is what we do. I think that's the very best way to be transparent. I loved how she framed that up. And if she is as transparent with other people in her organization, which I believe she is, as she was with me on that interview, I think that's a really good start. So being clear about what you're doing, why you're doing it, who's on the team, what the roles are. But I think being able to have a compelling mission for the overall team is really important. And then be able to explain how the two different teams work together.
I want to jump in on this one, because one of the myths that I didn't articulate that is Darren's phrase that I love is this notion that there's no I in team. In these teams, we believe there is an I, and it's the CEO. And the CEO has to be very clear what they want that inner team to do. What is their reason for existing? And they have to be clear what that outer team is there to do together. And I don't want to distinguish between a group or a team. I want to say, what's our mission? What's our purpose in coming together? And if the leader doesn't articulate that, then nobody knows how to work with each other. And that is another piece of the transparency. This group is here to make the final decision. This group is here to weigh in on just clarity on what our roles are.
Yeah. So it's really about putting that CEO taking be more intentional, to use another I word, but also, you know, to really step up and say, I'm going to own this. Here's how I want us to operate. And here's why it would be more effective. And that makes a lot of sense. And I think knowing where you stand or knowing the rules of the game makes it more effective, to your point, Darren, of like, okay, here's how I can contribute and help. Now, I talked about zooming in and zooming out. I think that's a really important concept. Wanda, can you talk a little more about how these hubs connect and how they zoom out to the larger group and zoom in and what that looks like?
Yeah. I think two pieces are missing when we look at top teams. Three. One, the CEO has an articulated purpose. Two, the inner team is not as tight as they pretend they are. So I think there's work to be done there. And three, they don't understand their role in zooming in to be tight with each other and then zooming out to carry the rest of the team. So the zooming out means, okay, we've been debating this issue. Who else needs to be involved? How do we get them involved? What's the right path for that? Do we do that one-on-one? Did two of us go and talk to them? Or do one of us go and talk to them? Or do we have a big debate in the larger group? If we're going to have a bigger debate, which one of us is going to model the contrary point of view? How are we showing psychological safety and fostering the kind of discussion we're looking to get in that larger group? And it's that intentionally stepping out of the precious position into an important pillar in the larger group that creates the holding vessel, literally, to make that larger group function. Darren, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think it's important to think about the opposite of everything we've been talking about. There's one team I worked with fairly recently where the CEO was very adamant that he needed to have this larger team, in his case, about 16, 17 people, all function the way we're describing an inner hub. The problem is when I interviewed the members of his team, they all described that there was, in fact, an inner team. And by not acknowledging it, it created all sorts of dysfunction. Okay. So to Wanda's point, if you're not having that inner team function the way it needs to, it creates a lot of angst for the outer team because they recognize, no, what's actually happening is not what we say is happening. And so it's much more helpful if you can step in and say, here's what we need this team to do. Here's how they connect to the larger team. And in fact, in this particular case, the people on the outside, not in the hub, were asking for more of that. It's a way of just making sure everybody's aligned on what our roles and responsibilities are.
So does that give you a clear picture? We use the zooming in and zooming out kind of like a net stretch, you know, so that you come in to have this intense debate where you're close enough that you could actually finish each other's sentences. In fact, some of the best ones that I've seen often don't meet because they're in constant communication with each other. There's no need to meet. It's a regular daily flow of conversation. But they have to recognize that I can't just stay in that tight little hub and be secure. I have a wall with a larger team.
Yeah, it also seems like there, once you're on the inner hub, not only the CEO has to be clear, but that inner hub has to be clear on their roles and accountabilities and who they're working with and how they bring people along. And it almost feels like you have to have a certain type of leader as well. I mean, there's certain leaders who could be in this inner hub that can zoom in and out, and some that maybe are just not their thing. They don't want to bring people along, and they aren't going to be very good at that. Have you seen that case happen yet?
I haven't seen that case. I'll tell you what I have seen. So first off, these inner hubs are, I mean, one of the interesting phenomena is they're in very different personalities. And they don't necessarily like each other. Brett Borken has done some brilliant research going back at looking at major advances in the world and all sorts of places and saying frequently it was teams of twos and threes and had knockdown, drag-out fights and very different personalities and did not always agree. But they held this common goal of what they were trying to achieve and respect for each other that was pretty powerful. So I'll tell you a story working with a top team. And they say to me, yes, we have a tight team of four. It's all great. We're all glorious. Everything is wonderful. In truth, it's a team of two against two. That schism is getting felt throughout the top team. So there is no work to do with a 30, the whole hub, until you solve the problem with the twos and twos that are fighting. So I think it's much more in getting that inner circle to work well together and see their role, not so much the personality of the individual leaders.
Good point. Really good point. And the book you're referencing is called It Takes Two or Three, The Superpower of Small Teams, which is a great book. Darren, let's talk about decision-making a little bit, because I think this is really important, right? Decision-making is critical among executive teams. Walk us through an example of how, in a hub approach, decision-making might impact your organization or what good decision-making looks like.
First of all, important to recognize that even in a situation where you don't recognize an inner hub and an outer hub, most decisions in organizations get made by a small group of people. And so I think the idea that you're going to have 15 people come together and make a decision, if you look at it closely, it isn't really what's going on. Those 15 people may have an opinion, but they're not really weighing in on the decision making. So what's useful about having this inner hub is the intentionality. It's the CEO who can say, hey, this is what we're doing. Here's how the decision will be made. And that group can help check that CEO's judgment. That's part of it. But it's also, as we were just talking about zooming out, it's being able to zoom out and bring the right people into the conversation who can stress test it, who can come up with the contrarian view, who can say, okay, that sounds great, but have you thought about X, Y, and Z? And so it's bringing that tight group together to really make the decision, vet it, get it down the road pretty far, and then get other people relevant to it to be able to come in, support it, especially as you then start looking at implementing.
That's really helpful. And before we talk about how HR leaders can help their teams be more effective, I know it's early days for you guys as you're building this out methodology, but how is working with an executive team now, how are you shifting your approach to working with the executive teams and doing what we call team effectiveness with this hub approach? Are you starting to shift and think differently?
We believe that until the CEO is really clear what the CEO wants and what they want these teams to do and how they're going to work with these teams, that you can just chuck every other effort out the door. So we believe that it starts with a deep work with the CEO. And then we come to how do we make sure that that inner hub is truly, really tight? Because they have to be able to finish each other's sentences. So Darren, you want to say a little bit more about how you think about doing that?
Yeah, and this is where a lot of what we know about team development comes into play. JP, Wanda and I are not in any way dismissing a lot of the great research and scholarship that's been done on team effectiveness. What we're saying is if you try to apply those principles to a management committee as a whole, it's probably not going to work very well. But those principles work really well when you have a team three or four people. The idea is, how do you get that hub really operating as exactly the team that most of us would say, yeah, this is what characterizes an effective team. And then also work with them on what it means to bring other people along, how that is part of their leadership as well. But to Wanda's point, my experience has been that you have to have a leader who's clear about why are we putting a team together in the first place? What are the advantages to it? We do have some bias working against us, unfortunately, that somehow teams are inherently good. Steve Jobs years ago on 60 Minutes said that great things happen in business that are never done by one person. They're always done by a team of people. The reality is that there's oftentimes when having too many people, too many cooks does spoil the broth. And so what we're trying to do is to recognize when you do team development really well, and when are those times that it's more about groups, and when do you have the individual leader? It really is more about almost like situational leadership, when to do what, how to help a leader become versatile and know when there's something that is an individual voice, when's it a team voice, when's it a larger group voice.
You would use a lot of the same kind of tools that we always use, but you're using it with four people, three to four people, where it's possible to make the dynamics between three or four people really function. I think making all the interpersonal dynamics work with 10, 15, 25 is an impossible task. We don't have enough hours in the day to worry about that, and you can't make it stick. So then when you come after you've done the work with the hub team, you come to the outer team. Now it is a lighter touch. There is work to do there in terms of transparency, in terms of what we're going to discuss, in terms of how we're going to discuss it, in terms of roles and responsibilities. There's work to do. But it's not that same level interpersonal dynamic work that we've always tried to do with 15 to 25 people.
Another way to think about it, JP, is that for the inner hub, team is a noun. For the outer rim, teaming is more of a verb. So you're helping a group really develop a real team. And if you think about Richard Hackman's work and the six conditions of effective teams, a lot of that stuff really does play out in the inner team. But when you start extrapolating it out, what you're really doing is helping a group of people work better together and collaborate more effectively, which is more teaming.
Great distinction. Really helpful when we went down and got a little bit more detailed, because I think a lot of us are approaching team in that way, the traditional way. And I think that's the request, that's the additional to ask, bring us together, get to know each other better, maybe clarify some roles and responsibilities. But, you know, to your point, it's a pretty large group and it's really challenging. So I think that's a really good distinction. Now, if you're an HR leader who has drank the Kool-Aid and said, okay, Wanda and Darren, I'm doing this. I want to embrace the notion of clarifying this hub with my CEO or leadership team. Where do you think they start? Where are one or two actions they should start on?
Well, this seems so obvious that I hesitate to even say it. But the first thing I would do is to talk to the CEO. What Wanda and I have both experienced is when you talk to leaders about how they actually operate, not how they think they should operate or what they believe is some aspirational team that they don't actually possess. I think a lot of CEOs, not all, but most, actually describe where they have this inner kitchen cabinet or this inner team. Or if you really get them talking and they feel safe, they'll describe this situation. So if you have the framework that goes in that says, this is actually a good way to work with a team, a lot of CEOs are already there. It's an opportunity to help them kind of shape that thinking more. So to me, that's the entry point. I'm curious, Wanda, have you experienced something similar or something more different?
I think it's similar. I think as an HR professional, when you're ready to meet the CEO where the CEO's head already is moving, you're halfway home, more than halfway home. You know, like join the bandwagon would be what I would say. And then to get really clear with the CEO about what's the purpose, what is the inner hub meeting to do? Is it a debate group or something else? And what's the outer hub meeting to do? Is it a showcase for talent? Is it a place where we're going to test a few ideas? Is it an information sharing? What is that outer hub's purpose? Start there. And then I think the question is to say, let's go back to the inner hub and say, how fit are we to be that tight circle? And what do we need to shore up? Now, that doesn't mean we all like each other. It doesn't mean we all agree. It doesn't mean we all have the same values, because I think that is highly unrealistic. So it's sort of accepting, how do we function more tightly together, even if we disagree adamantly on some things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so really the CEO's got to be clear too about why that inner circle, what role they play, what expertise they bring that maybe the CEO doesn't have. And I think you said it well, Darren, around it's not how we think it should work, it's actually how it is working. And a lot of times in HR, I think we sort of hope and fantasize for what we believe should happen or want to happen, but we don't acknowledge what's actually happening or how things actually work.
Yeah, and I would add to that, I think the starting point is the CEO. I have seen teams, as I mentioned a bit earlier, where a CEO, for example, really wants to, for whatever reason, lead a much more interdependent team than they actually are leading. And so I think it's also important to be able to take and kind of reality test a little bit with members of the team. So what's working on this team? What's not? And what I've seen multiple times is that they actually describe this sub team. In many cases, what they say is, that's not a bad thing. One person, his example really comes to mind. He says, you know, our CEO wants to lead a basketball team, highly interdependent. That's not what we need here. What we need is a golf team. We all play our own game, add our scores up at the end. Being able to get aligned, what kind of team are we leading? Is it a basketball team? Is that what this organization needs? Is it a golf team? Is that what the organization needs? That's where HR professionals, I think, are really well positioned to ask those questions, bring a variety of viewpoints together. And it may be sometimes that the CEO is on board. I think that's the most likely case. But it could also be that there's some things that a CEO doesn't see. That's some data from the team. You can bring some wisdom to bear on that as well.
That's a great example. What about, as we wrap up on this piece on teams, what's one key takeaway that you want HR leaders to remember about building effective teams? Wanda, can I start with you on this one?
They all don't look the way you think they should look. So even as we've described this inner hub and outer hub, and I imagine everybody's drawing a nice, neat circle where everything's all nicely connected, I'm looking at one of the teams that I know right now, and I will say they are functioning exactly the way we described, except it doesn't look like a pretty picture. When I draw it, there's some parallels missing. There are people who float in and out of the inner circle. It isn't always neat and tidy. So I'd like, don't drive for perfection.
Great. Darren?
The wisdom I would pass on is that you have to be able to have a good fight. And I think to Wanda's point, good fights are often messy, but we don't use that language sometimes. And I think it's important. The best inner hub teams that I know of are ones where they will be respectful of each other. They know each other's strengths and weaknesses, but they have no problem saying, I think that's a bad idea and here's why. It doesn't become personal typically, but it can become very heated when they really do engage in those debates. But it's important also to bear in mind that you're talking about two teams, not one. So as you think about what works for the inner team, that's not the same set of dynamics or the same tools that you might use with the outer team.
Great advice from both of you. All right, last question for both. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
I have a mission on this one. I'm sorry, JP. My phrase is business first. I think as HR professionals, we have to understand how the business works, why the business works, what drives the business, and actually enjoy the business. And I think that then defines the work we do in HR in service of the business. And that would be my one future watchword.
I love it.
So let me build on Wanda's idea, because I agree completely with the premise. And we live in a time that's pretty unique right now. There is so much of an obsession with AI. Technology is going to revolutionize what we do. And I think there's a lot of advances with AI, but not in any way taking issue with that. But I would say that human leadership, the uniquely human capabilities, such as humility and curiosity, awareness, empathy, wisdom, I think you've got to have those in order for HR to have a seat at the table to put the business first. They have to be complementary and work with these new technologies. But if we just think about the technology, we're going to be misguided. So that human component of what only human beings can really do, I think is a very important aspect as well.
I agree. Business first, humans first. Wanda, Darren, thank you for being a feature of HR Podcast. I think we make a nice little hub. I don't know if we're ready for that, but I felt like we're close. So thanks so much for being on the podcast.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
Thanks for the opportunity, JP.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Wanda and Darren for sharing their innovative and new approach to top team effectiveness. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Rena Hellstrom, founder of the Agile HR Community. Rena is a global pioneer in Agile HR, and her company has been helping her clients move towards modern HR operating models, digitizing HR services, using AI in HR, and adopting modern leadership across the organization. And in our conversation, we're going to dive into what is Agile HR and how can you start to apply it in your organization. This is a great conversation and one you will not want to miss. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.